Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a discussion with one of the signatories of a letter in today's Washington Post urging President Obama to say no to a war of choice with Iran. Paul Piller, the former National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia, joins us to explain why he and many senior military officials are concerned that what is being billed as an Iran problem is an Israeli problem, and if there is a war with Iran, Israel will not be just a contributing factor, but the prime mover. Then we will speak with Bob Samuels, the president of University Council, who is in Sacramento at the state capitol, along with thousands of others, demonstrating against tuition hikes and education cuts that are decimating what was once the country's leader in public education, California, which now languishes near the bottom with Mississippi. Then finally, Anne-Marie O'Connor joins us in the studio. She's the author of a new book, The Lady in Gold, the extraordinary tale of Gustav Klimt's masterpiece portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. Anne-Marie writes for The Washington Post from Mexico City, and we will hear about her recent investigations into how the Mexican drug cartels are kidnapping immigrant women from Central America and forcing them into the sex trade. We'll also discuss the ongoing struggle of returning art stolen by the Nazis to the rightful heirs of the original owners, most of whom were murdered by the Nazis. Joining us now is Paul Piller, who served for 30 years as an analyst at the CIA, in which his last position was National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia. Previously served as Chief of Analytical Units at the CIA, covering portions of the Near East, the Persian Gulf, and South Asia. He also headed the Assessments and Information Group of the Director of Central Intelligence's Counterterrorist Center, and from 1997 to 1999 was Deputy Director of the Center. Paul Piller is currently a professor of security studies at Georgetown University and a member of the Center for Peace and Security Studies. He, along with a group of senior military officers, signed a full-page letter to President Obama in today's Washington Post. Mr. President, say no to a war of choice with Iran. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Piller.
Thank you. Nice to be with you, Ian.
And apparently today's meeting at the White House, Prime Minister Netanyahu gave President Obama a gift, which is a decorated copy of the Book of Esther, which recounts the story of the evil Persian king and his viceroy, Haman, who tried but failed to annihilate the Jewish people, and to which Netanyahu told the president, then too, they wanted to wipe us out. How much is this situation of a war with Iran being driven by that existential threat that the Israeli people feel, that was after all expressed on a number of occasions by President Ahmadinejad of Iran?
Well, it's being driven to a large degree by the, I should say, understandable fears of the Israeli people, which go well beyond the Netanyahu government, although Mr. Netanyahu has been the most forceful enunciator of that fear. I think we are dealing mainly in the realm of fear and emotion, and while it is, again, I emphasize, understandable in light of the absolutely awful anti-Israel rhetoric that we hear regularly from the Iranian leaders, and especially from President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, it's quite a different issue to ask what the actual effect of an Iranian nuclear weapon would be. I think it's particularly instructive when you look at the views of some very knowledgeable and dedicated Israelis beyond the Netanyahu government who have a different view of these sorts of things. At least a couple, no less than three, really, current or former heads of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agency, have spoken in very different terms from the prime minister. The current director of the service, Mr. Pardo, and a past director, Ephraim Halevi, have both explicitly said, no, an Iranian nuclear weapon would not be an existential threat to Israel. Yet another former and very well-known head of Mossad, Meir Dagan, once referred to the idea of an Israeli military strike on Iran as, quote, the stupidest idea I've ever heard, unquote. And I think what they are referring to implicitly is the fact that even if Iran got a nuclear weapon, Israel would retain overwhelming military superiority. partly through its own nuclear force, which most international think tanks who have looked at this issue estimate to be at least 100 warheads, maybe as much as 200 or possibly more, as well as delivery systems that would go well, well beyond anything Iran could muster.
So in a way, though, it feels like we've seen this movie before, Paul Pillar, in terms of the drumbeat. And I think it's fair to say that the drumbeat for the Iraq war, pretty much the same chorus are out there beating the drums. The neoconservatives who brought us the Iraq war, which, after all, the Israeli military historian Martin Van Creewel described as the worst strategic blunder since Emperor Augustus sent his legions into Germany in 9 AD. We know the damage that was done by that rush to war and the extent to which the justification for it was manufactured. And there's no question that the same neoconservatives are very much in the same circles. They're pushing the war and they're very close to Netanyahu. And I haven't heard the remarks yet that Netanyahu is making tonight. We're waiting to hear what they are before AIPAC. But it seems like the remarks that you just made, quoting senior intelligence officials in Israel, echo Van Creewel's words, that the one thing that the one consistent thing about the neocons is that they're reckless and dangerous in terms of strategic blunders.
Well, there are indeed many disturbing parallels between the run-up to the Iraq war and what we're seeing now, especially the hyping, I think that's the right word, of the weapons of mass destruction and especially nuclear weapons dimension, and coupling that with all of the other loathsome characteristics that were true of the Saddam Hussein regime and we can say are true of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And yes, indeed, it is many of the same people and same elements making very much the same arguments. I would draw a couple of distinctions. Well, the obvious one, I think, to begin with is we do not have an incumbent U.S. administration which is hankering for a war. Instead, we have a president who I don't think wants war and is trying to juggle the pressure from the Israelis with domestic politics and what makes strategic sense. So that's quite different than what we had with the Bush administration. And I also would draw a difference, at least in degree, of how much the Israeli dimension is part of this. I think it would be fair to say that with the selling of the Iraq war, the Israel dimension was part of it, but only a contributing factor. I think we were talking mainly about a neoconservative ideology that had an existence and an energy of its own that did not solely depend on the idea of a threat to Israel. Whereas with this Iran issue today, all you have to do is look at where most of the rhetoric is coming from and the fact that we've reached a kind of peak of this issue to coincide with the AIPAC meeting and Mr. Netanyahu's visit this week, to realize that much more of the energy is coming specifically from the Israeli government.
Well, I suppose, though, the fact that Dick Cheney's daughter got the most applause at AIPAC yesterday for her withering attacks of the Obama administration and the extent to which her father was one of the main salesmen, if you will, for the Iraq war, I suppose there's some connection, right?
Oh, there certainly are. There are connections all over the place. Someone like William Kristol, who was one of the big movers for the Iraq war with his committee that he put together, well, he's doing similar things now with regard to this issue. No, I just wanted to make some distinction between the two in terms of, as a matter of degree, how much the whole Israel dimension figures into the debate.
Well, I suppose the difference is that the Israel's friends here in the United States were the neoconservatives were pushed the Iraq war and were largely the architects of it. This time, the Iran war is being pushed by Israel itself, but at least by this government.
I think that's a good way to summarize it, yes.
And again, I'm speaking with Paul Pillar, who served for 30 years as an analyst at the CIA, in which his last position was a National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia. He, along with a group of senior military officers, signed a full-page letter to President Obama in today's Washington Post. Mr. President, say no to a war of choice with Iran. And the letter is actually quite brief. I can read it. Dear Mr. President, the U.S. military is the most formidable military force on Earth, but not every challenge has a military solution. Unless we or an ally is attacked, war should be the option of last resort. Our brave servicemen and women expect you to exhaust all diplomatic and peaceful options before you send them into harm's way. Preventing a nuclear-armed Iran is rightfully your priority and your red line. Fortunately, diplomacy has not been exhausted and peaceful solutions are still possible. Military action at this stage is not only unnecessary, it is dangerous for the United States and for Israel. We urge you to resist the pressure of a war of choice with Iran. And then it's signed by Major General Paul Eaton, Tom Finger, former Deputy Director of National Intelligence and Analysis at the INR, State Department, Lieutenant General Robert Gard, General Joseph Hoare, former Commandant of the Marine Corps, Brigadier General John Johns, Major General Rudolf Ostrovich, and our guest today, Paul Pillar, along with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's Chief of Staff. So why the letter, Paul Pillar?
Because, as we've been discussing, the heat on this issue has become hotter than ever right now. You quite correctly said, Ian, that it's not a new issue. It's been around for a while. I've been writing about this for some time, and it reminds me how much the agitation for this has been going on for some time. I think what's different this year is not so much anything that the Iranians are doing with their centrifuges or their research, although, of course, we hear about that just about every week. It's more having to do with the U.S. electoral calendar and how that figures into Israeli governmental political calculations, and that's why the meetings today were so important. I don't have a direct insight, of course, into the thinking of Mr. Netanyahu's government, but given how important the playing, shall we say, of American politics works for Israeli leaders, no doubt the fact that an incumbent president, whom they don't probably especially like, given some of the frictions that there have been in the relationship between Obama and Netanyahu, is running for re-election, is facing the political realities in doing so that were represented at that convention hall, at that AIPAC meeting. But that if he is reelected, then come the second week in November, they would be facing an incumbent president who never is going to have to run for anything again. And I think my calculation, if I were sitting in Mr. Netanyahu's chair, is that if I was going to do anything forcefully, militarily on this Iranian matter, the next few months are the time to do it.
Well, that is the president's greatest fear, and apparently he's not been able to get any assurances. And there's no question that there is a history to the extent to which AIPAC and their influence over the U.S. Congress enforcing the issue. After all, the National Defense Authorization Act was pushed through by Lindsey Graham and Senator McCain and sold on the Hill by AIPAC. That the president threatened to veto that on the basis that it would cause the price of gasoline to rise, which it has, which has in turn become a main campaign theme for the Republicans. So without being too cynical, it would seem to me that given the fratricide going on between the Republican candidates, it's logical to assume that the only way or the best way to beat Obama would be a war where the president would be sidelined and embarrassed by a chorus of people, crying for us to join in the side of Israel. And meanwhile, of course, the price of gasoline would go through the ceiling.
Yes, that would be from the standpoint of Israeli hardliners on the right, and I include Mr. Netanyahu in that category, all a bonus for them. That is to say, anything from rising gasoline prices to whatever else causes controversy back here in the United States that would hurt Mr. Obama's reelection chances, that would be a good thing from their point of view. I don't think that the economic welfare of American consumers and workers would figure very high in their list of criteria that they would apply to their decision as to whether to launch a war or not.
So given that that the president hasn't been able to get these assurances out of Netanyahu, at least been able to tell us publicly that he has, and he's talked about other options being on the table, is it possible that then he's being forced into, it does seem strange that the superpower has to be the supplicant in this situation. Is he then saying to Netanyahu, look, lay off and once I get reelected, then maybe we'll take care of Iran then. And by the way, we the U.S. have the means to do so. And the Israelis could cause nothing but trouble, but they wouldn't be able to knock the program out.
Well, it's been strange for a long time that the superpower is a supplicant, and that deals with many issues beyond this one. What the president's clearly trying to do in holding off this prospect of an Israeli attack in the next few months is to use all his persuasion he can in saying, yes, diplomacy is still promising, and yes, I'm doing everything I can with regard to sanctions to support that effort, and to try to buy enough time by doing those things, and also as a sort of counterweight to that, to talk tough, just as we heard him before AIPAC yesterday, on two particular themes. One, that he's still got the so-called military option on the table. And secondly, repeatedly and unequivocally saying that an Iranian nuclear weapon is unacceptable. Now, what he seems to be doing, or at least this is my guess, what the president is doing, is he is gambling that the diplomacy will be able to pay off soon enough that sometime, while he is still president, he can turn to Netanyahu and say, yes, it indeed worked. That is a gamble because there are many things, even though I wholeheartedly agree with everything the president said, and as we said in the letter, that there's a lot of diplomacy yet to be tried. There's also a lot of ways in which the diplomacy can be subverted, and I think the Israeli government is doing some of that already with regard to the terrorist attacks against Iranian scientists, with regard to levying demands about no uranium enrichment at all, which is really a non-starter for the Iranians. Any deal that we manage to reach with Tehran is going to have to allow for some kind of continued enrichment program under safeguard. And Netanyahu, in his remarks up in Canada before he got here to Washington, seemed to be just flatly ruling out negotiations. He said it's just too dangerous. You know, don't do that with the Iranians. So with that kind of, criticism and complication from the Israeli side, that's going to make the negotiations harder than ever, even though we do indeed have to pursue them. I don't know if the president has some other rabbit in his hat that he hopes to pull out, but that's what seems to me to be the strategy. And his main concern is getting through these next several months without a war being started.
Well, but surely the record of the same people who are promoting this war and what happened with Iraq, where essentially Iran won the Iraq war, and if you were to attack Iran, wouldn't they win that war? First of all, the situation in Syria would completely reverse in the sense that a noxious dictatorship would be the greatest reprieve they could hope for. The Israelis wouldn't be able to stop the Iranian program significantly. The world would rally against it. The entire Western economies would be in trouble because of the price of oil. That would benefit Chavez and Putin, but nobody else. The downside's pretty enormous, isn't it?
The downside is enormous. None of us know exactly what the consequences would be. I have little doubt that the Iranians would find their own asymmetric ways, mainly through clandestine attacks, to respond. I think the economic effects, some of which you just mentioned, would be the most salient immediate effects. Beyond that, I'd mention some other things that you didn't touch on. The political consequences inside Iran would be very likely in the direction of bolstering support for the Iranian hardliners in a traditional rally-round-the-flag sort of effect. And beyond that, you have the longer-term effects both in poisoning relations with generations of Iranians, as well as lending extremist ideologists and groups one more big, huge propaganda point in stoking anti-Americanism throughout the Muslim world. This would be one more instance of either the United States or what is seen as its Israeli client killing Muslims for their own purposes. This would not do us any good. And so this whole range of things, short-term economic consequences, long-term political consequences, would indeed be overwhelmingly negative. And it, at most, would set back the Iranian nuclear efforts only by a couple of years.
Well, in order to get rid of a president that the Israeli prime minister may not like, and his Republican friends over here clearly almost hate obsessively, it sounds to me like a huge price to pay. And hopefully it is such a horrible prospect that it simply won't happen. But the very fact that we're even having this discussion, and we're not making this up because we know this is what the president and the prime minister have been talking about at the White House today. And it's a pretty appalling set of affairs, even if the worst doesn't happen, isn't it?
Well, it is extraordinary. But at least if there's a glimmer of something more positive here, there is some realistic thinking in Israel. I mentioned some of it earlier in our conversation with regard to some of the people who, by their own experience, are deeply committed to the security of the state of Israel and have the expertise to discuss it. And in many Israeli minds, individual minds, I think there's a tussle between those very sound strategic considerations that people like Ephraim Halevi and Meir Dagan have mentioned as to why it would be a mistake to go to war with Iran. There's a tussle between that and the more emotional aspect, the fear that you would have something in the terms in which Netanyahu describes it, a repeat of the Holocaust. I think the great majority of knowledgeable Israelis know that that is not really what we're dealing with here, but it is hard to get out of their minds and their hearts the emotion and the fear that goes with that. And I guess it's hard for many of us to put ourselves in the same position, but that's basically the mental and emotional struggle that's going on inside Israel today.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Paul Piller.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Piller, who served for 30 years as an analyst at the CIA, in which his last position was National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia. Previously served as Chief of Analytical Units at the CIA, covering portions of the Near East, the Persian Gulf, and South Asia. He also headed the Assessments and Information Group of the Director of Central Intelligence Counterterrorist Center, and from 97 to 99 was Deputy Chief of the Center. Paul Piller is currently a professor of security studies at Georgetown University and a member of the Center for Peace and Security Studies. He, along with a group of senior military officers, signed a full-page letter to President Obama in today's Washington Post. Mr. President, say no to a war of choice with Iran. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll go up to Sacramento, where there's a vast student demonstration taking place, and we'll talk to one of the organizers.
Man is supposed to be playing. Wants it all and it wants it this way. Now there's a woman on my block. She just sits there as the night grows still. Saying, who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Whose life is so cute.